It's 5 o'clock on Friday afternoon. My name's Jacob.
Well, I must be Mercedes then. And we're on Community Radio 3CR with Friday Rave. That's right, it's 5 o'clock. It's Friday. Well, actually, it's about 1 o'clock where we are, but you're listening to this at 5 o'clock because it's a pre-record today with a Friday Rave with me, Jacob.
And me, Mercedes. Thanks for holding down the fort last week for the May Day broadcast.
Oh, broadcast. No worries, mate. It was like old times, just having to remember how to operate the desk.
But also it was a fantastic day of programming. Mm-hmm. So if you haven't tuned in, you can go to the May Day page on the 3CR website and listen back to the brilliant 24 hours of May Day broadcasting.
Or you could just go to a Friday Raves page on the 3CR.
That's right, you could indeed. And yeah, it's we're in May now. It's the start of May, obviously, 1 week in. And next month we have Radiothon coming up.
Radiothon is basically the bread and butter of this community radio station.
It absolutely is. It is what keeps 3CR on the air and independent.
Yeah, and that's a big part of it, you know, because, look, let's be fair, there's not going to be, you hear some of the things we talk about on a Friday Rave. Now, there's not going to be a lot of government funding or commercial funding for these kind of programs. We get some government funding for particular projects, mm-hmm. you know, which is fair enough. But really, the only thing that enables us to say what we say and to call an arsehole publicly is the fact that we're paid. Well, we're not paid. We don't get paid for doing this, but the station raises its money to keep it on air with all the associated costs therein through donations from volunteers right across, well, not just right across Melbourne, but right across the country.
Right across the continent. And when in Australia has some of the most concentrated media landscape, yeah. And 3CR is a beacon that sets aside from that. It's community powered, it's run by people, for people. What you hear on 3CR, you do not hear anywhere else. And so Radiothon, it's 50 years of the station this year, and 3CR has been doing this since 1976. Despite its challenges from the Zionist lobby to try and bring it down, it's fought it every time. Yep. This is what this station is, and you, dear listeners, and us and everybody involved, it's really, you know, 50 years and let's another 50, 100 more.
Yeah. And, you know, there. So come our 50th anniversary in, when is it, July, isn't
it? The 4th of July at Collingwood Hound Hall is celebration.
Independence Day, some people might call it.
Independent Radio Day.
Independent Radio Day. I wonder if that's why they chose the 4th of July to start with. Who knows? Maybe we'll ask John or Joe or one of those people who are out at the start. But, but you don't need to wait till Radiothon. You can donate now. You get online, you'll find a button saying donate somewhere, or you can ring the station on 9419... 8377.
8377, I think it's in there somewhere.
We're doing this from the remote Friday Rave
headquarters with the axolotl mascots.
Yeah.
But no, June is Radiothon month in the lead up to the 50th anniversary celebrations. So yeah, you can jump on now. There'll be a broad range of programming. Listen back during June because there's going to be old material of from 3CR, old broadcasts, you know, celebrating and showing you what it is. And for those of you that are listening that are already part of it, also, maybe you don't know people, or, you know, people aren't aware of what 3CR is. Tell them how good it is.
Yeah. Kidnap them in your car and put it on the radio.
Maybe don't do that.
Drive around the freeways with 3CR blaring through a horn on your roof rack. Sorry.
No, but just get ready and if you're out there and you want to do something for 3CR, even if you don't have a program, If you know how to organise an event, get in touch.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Just come in and get involved. Not just about raising money. I mean, raising money is the least you can do. Really, it's the least you can do. The most you can do, what we prefer, is coming in and being involved.
Exactly.
But, yeah. But we know people have lives, except for you and I.
Yeah.
And can't do that. But let's get into this week. Some years ago, many years ago, I spoke about the emergence of a company called Linus, who was working in rare earths, and their CEO, Amanda Lacaze, or Lacaze, however you say her name, spoke at the National Press Club yesterday. And Mercedes, I believe you were there, tuned in and hanging off her every word.
Yeah, speaking of having a life, I was hanging off every word. And I guess Amanda Lacaze speaking at the National Press Club would be what I would call just an exercise in nationally broadcast public lobbying. Because she covered all of the bases. She talked about Linus being, I guess, a cornerstone for Australian minerals extraction and processing, with all of the audacity to acknowledge the traditional custodians of the lands on which they mine at the beginning. And she covered all the bases. She talked about unionisation and the need for, because mining workers have such good conditions and pay, and that Linus cares about their workers, that workers don't need organisation. Funnily enough, I wonder where all of those conditions came from.
Workers don't need a union. Companies like Linus, for example, still need the Minerals Council and various other corporate Melbourne club-style bodies.
Yes.
Yeah, but the workers don't need a union.
But the workers don't need a union, apparently, according to Amanda Lacaze. She did thank Madeleine King, the Resources Minister, for being there and giving her her ear, as if she doesn't have it already. But for those of you that don't know Linus, Linus are one of the only companies, or if not the only Australian company, that has the capability to refine and process both heavy and rare earth minerals.
Yes. It used to mine them here and send them over to Malaysia, because the environmental laws in Australia were too stringent for the, the downstream processing of rare earths. It creates so much pollution and so much shit. And the Malaysian laws weren't quite as tight as Australia's, so they used to do that in Malaysia. Malaysia then tightened its laws, and Linus had nowhere left to go, so the Australian government relaxed our laws so they could come back to Australia.
And it was in 2025, Linus officially opened its heavy and light rare earth minerals processing facility at Kalgoorlie, where it gets most of from its Mount Weld mine.
Mount Weld, which is just outside of Laverton in the West Australian desert. It's a little town where I used to live in.
Ah.
Yeah.
There you go. And so she's, you know, spoke about that, the relationship with Japan, which essentially backed that project, financially backed that project, and that wouldn't have happened without Japanese backing, and a company called Sojitz, which they have offtake agreements with.
Yes.
And I guess, I mean, look, if you've got a spare hour, I think it's important to talk about. We talk about critical minerals on and rare earths. Critical minerals expand more than just the 17 rare earth elements. But I guess this has been in the news much more recently, and this was an opportunity for Amanda Lacaze to get up on a national platform to speak about why it's important and why they want Linus to increase its market capitalization another 475 times, as it has done in the last 12 years.
And this is her valedictory speech too.
Yes, because she's outgoing. Yeah. And so what was, you know, spoken about was giving tax offsets and breaks, which is for producers and processing facilities, which is something that is already happening under the Critical Minerals Production Incentive Tax. And also echoing Scott Morrison. There was also some students from Canberra Grammar, and Amanda Lacaz took the opportunity to say, get into engineering because Australia is not producing the engineers. We need to be able to do this. And Australian universities aren't, apparently. So it's we've got to get the kids involved in engineering so we can dig up the earth and destroy it for rare earth and critical minerals for weapons capability.
Yeah, and of course the whole push about these critical minerals. Look, critical minerals is a very vague term. It just means any mineral which the military-industrial complex deems is critical for manufacture.
Because there's a supply chain risk.
Yeah, because there's a supply chain risk, right?
AKA China.
China, and that's what I wanted to get to, China. The whole thing is predicated on China is doing this. I mean, you told me she said something about China using its industrial strength.
Yes, and so in the era of globalization, so this is a paraphrase quote. China's push towards monopolizing rare earth processing passed with little note when governments believed in the benefit of globalization. But it had since become clear that some countries would use industrial policy to advance their national interest first.
Use industrial policy to advance their national interest. Isn't that what they're supposed to do?
Well, yeah.
I mean, except for Australia. Australia is using its industrial policy to advance American interests.
Yes, absolutely.
How dare China?
Trying to advance their own interests.
Yeah, and it's all about China. And here's the thing. Once you're talking about you kids go and learn to be engineers. We need engineers. The reason we haven't got engineers is because the privatised universities make more money getting foreign students from guess where?
Yeah.
Who then go back and work for companies. I mean, it's ridiculous what she's saying.
Yeah, and I think it was a futile exercise in trying to build up this, oh, China is very dangerous in this because they're a supply chain risk because they have used in the frame
industrial muscle.
Their industrial muscle to ban the exports of certain minerals that America needs. The US needs.
How dare they?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, anyway. So, I mean, look, there's too many kind of parts in the speech to mention of just how ridiculous it is. But I think it's important. On a Friday rave a little while ago when we were talking about critical minerals again, if you've noticed, it's a bugbear. But we talked about a deal with MP Materials, a US-based company.
That's right.
And I think that it's that was recognised as by Amanda Lacaz as shifting the scope of what a price floor would look like to make it more competitive.
Right, right.
Yeah. So basically it was a plea and a lobby to politicians to do more for the poor old miners so they can keep digging up, destroying the earth and making more money.
Yeah, and look, and just I want to put out a little bit of a warning here. When we first mentioned Linus years ago on a Friday rave, a regular listener come back to me and thanked me for the tip because he put all his superannuation into Linus. This is not why we talk about companies growing.
No.
Friends and other listeners. It's not investment advice.
Absolutely not. The furthest thing from it.
Oh, dear. Well, how are we going on time?
Oh, we've got 15 minutes.
15 minutes. Can we talk more about Linus or do I move on to...
Oh, look, I mean, there's a lot that you could say about Linus, but they're going to be looking at expanding. And I guess what their Kalgoorlie processing plant is it's not just for Linus as well. What we're likely going to see is going to be more as... critical minerals and critical minerals mining and exploration is going to get a chop out from the Australian government in order to bolster this processing, which is the push to be processed onshore, is going to happen at Linus's processing plant in Western Australia. So this is not just a single company. It's about how this company can lobby and be bolstered to support the other projects.
Yeah.
that are happening. And now Nolan's Boar, which Arafura Resources, Nolan's Boar, which is one of the flagship projects that is has been mentioned by the federal government. It's also about where they're going to, where they're getting the resources for that. So they want to tap into the gas fields, the Beetaloo Basin gas, in order to operate, have their operations.
Yeah.
And so this is the downstream impacts of what this single processing facility and that capability means for destruction on other parts of the continent.
Yeah, and it's everywhere. It's you know, there's Eneabba just north of Perth. Is having some processing of rare earth stuff. I think it's lithium, although I'm not sure. There's one down near Harden in the southwest, and they're talking about Donald in Victoria.
That's right. So Donald is a new project, and also antimony mining up near Bendigo.
Antimony mining, yeah.
Yeah, and so that's getting a thing. And I think it's also around, when you talk about the timing of this, around 2022, was really kind of a peak time for critical minerals, I guess, the discussion and the talk of what that looked like. And
a critical time, you could say.
A critical time, you could say. And I think, you know, what Amanda Lacaz touched on was like Australia has always just been considered a mine pit. Australia is a mine pit because the production doesn't happen. And her argument was that we need to increase more sovereign capability in order to do that processing. And it's like that's echoing the 2022 policy of the US, which is the mine to magnet pipeline.
Yep.
And but also, I guess, just bringing this back, you know, to a defencing is like, okay, lithium batteries, you know, is lithium as a critical mineral, but Australia, as of 2022, Australia was importing 100% of its lithium ion batteries.
Yep.
And this is not an argument for that, but when we're talking about weapon systems and sovereign capability for those weapon systems to be built in Australia, it's like, as an example, Hanwha, the facility down in Lara near Avalon, that are building the Redback infantry fighting vehicle. The company that makes the batteries for those is an Israeli company called Epsilor. And so Epsilor delivered last year the first few batteries for those Redbacks.
Right.
And I had a bit of a look into this company, and it's an Israeli company. And in order to be a registered Australian business, to be those things to be considered a sovereign capability, Epsilor's just paid a company that sells its service to be a registered address in Australia in order for an overseas company to be a registered Australian business.
Yeah.
So despite all of the batteries, they're being manufactured, developed by this Israeli company that has just rented a post office box, essentially, Adelaide.
You rent a ghost office somewhere in the one of the financial districts.
And, of course, you know, the Hanwha, the Redback Infantry Fighting Vehicle, is not the Epsilor. There's Elbit Systems involved in that. There's Platan Sasa. There's a whole bunch of Israeli companies that are involved in this. And that's
not just Israeli companies.
And not just Israeli
companies. German companies, Norwegian companies, Korean companies.
Exactly. There's multitudes. Yeah. So, you know, when they're talking about sovereign capability, it's like and building it here and manufacturing it here. It's a whole lot of bullshit.
It's rubbish. And even then, I spoke at, just mentioned at the end of last week's program, how the Australian government's been giving grants out for millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars to build missile plants and then buys missiles from the United States so that our missile plants can sell missiles to the United States.
Yep.
It's all about keeping the money moving around.
Yeah, it is indeed. And, you know, just on that, it was only, I think it was, yeah, at the end of April, 29th of April, the Victorian government has opened a whole bunch of grants for Victorian critical minerals mining. So this is not just a federal issue with the Victorian budget coming out the other day, which I haven't had a look at, but as part of the Labor's critical minerals roadmap, the Victorian government giving out grants for critical minerals exploration and mining here in Victoria.
Yeah, yeah. This is, it's an all of government approach, state governments, federal governments. It's everywhere.
Yeah, and so this is for the exploration specifically of antimony mining and processing in Victoria.
Antimony, right, okay.
Yeah.
So look out for an antimony mine. You notice some antimony, of course, is used a lot in the production of technologies and in mobile phones and things.
And sensors and all of that kind of stuff, yeah.
But it's, but, you know, in the old days, antimony used to be used as eyeshadow.
Yeah, right.
All right, as black. So if you notice a whole lot of corporate types meeting in your small community that look like goths, they're probably checking out the antimony mines.
They're not goths, they're just bloodsuckers. All right, we've got about 10 minutes left. Jake, what's happening in the world of defence spending?
What's not happening?
Yeah.
Well, global military spending has gone up about, let me let the thing, globally 3% or 2.9% in real terms over what in 2025-26 over what it was in 24-25. Now, strangely enough, the only countries that have declined, reduced military spending, are the United States and Israel.
Oh.
Now, that's partly, I guess, because Israel had a huge year, huge few years, and, you know, there are not many things left in Gaza to launch rockets at. Basically, let's call a spade, there aren't too many children left to kill.
Yeah.
So they don't need to spend so much money. And the United States has gone down because of its diminished grants and military aid to Ukraine.
Ah, of course.
All right.
And also I think this kind of couples in, I guess it wouldn't make a large dent, but the US, I guess, is pushing its allies to have
more increased
spending to offset their...
Yeah.
Declining spending.
Yeah. And so global military spending is currently at $2,887,000,000,000 US dollars. Now, in Australian dollars, because we're in Australia, so we talk Australian dollars, to round it out, it's about $4 trillion.
$4 trillion.
$4 trillion Australian dollars. And how much is, it's ridiculous. We talk about trillions of dollars all the time. We talk about trillions of dollars. And we can't really visualize what $4 trillion is or what $4 trillion is. But we just say it like it's a number and it doesn't mean anything, but it does. And just to give you an idea of how big this number is, 4 trillion seconds is about 100,000 years. All right. There are estimated to be just below 3 trillion trees on the earth.
Mm.
All right. So we're spending more dollars on military equipment than there are trees on the planet.
If you put the notes on top of each other, how far into the atmosphere would they go?
Oh, past their military satellites.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Past their military satellites.
So they're spending more. There's more global spending than there are trees on the planet.
More dollars spent on the military than there are trees on planet Earth, and some would say that trees are the life and lungs of planet Earth. But that's not enough. They want to spend more. There's always this more, and we've gone. Oh, look, how do I get into this? Some people would have been impressed, and people have mentioned to me how impressed they were with the Canadian Prime Minister, Mark Carney, in February, taking on Donald Trump at Davos, all right? And he became sort of like for a while the darling of the anti-Trump forces, as if he was some kind of lefty or some kind of peace stick.
Gee, we're really clutching at straws.
This bloke... was the head of the Bank of England.
Yeah.
Not just the Bank of Canada. He was the head of the Bank of England for half a dozen years or something. The only non-POM to ever have that role. This bloke is a capitalist through and through. And the latest thing they're working on now is this thing they're calling the, what's it called? I just need to bring it up. the DSRB, the Defence Security and Resilience Bank.
Oh, yes.
Right? The Defence Security and Resilience Bank is like a multilateral lending institution, an MLI, they call them. Similar to things like the various World Bank divisions, the IMF, for example, then the Asia Development Bank, etc., like that.
And now, this is a bank that will operate internationally?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And it seems to be a Canadian initiative, and it looks like it's going to be housed in Canada. And what they're aimed to be doing is this is like, look, it's about currencies. It's about currencies. You know, we've been saying for years on this show that there are only three militaries in the world, the dollar, the yuan, and the euro, all right? Mm-hmm. And while we often concentrate on the dollar-yuan conflict, there is also a very strong dollar-euro conflict. And, you know, Donald Trump has even said that the European Union was set up as a counter to American power, all right? And look, who could blame them? So what we're looking at is, and they're including America, all the talks are including America in this talk about the DSRB, because it's mainly NATO, but it's not, it's about taking it away from America. So the idea being that countries, middle powers, like France, Italy, possibly Australia, could give our money to this bank, and this bank will then borrow money based on those assets, like put on a mortgage, to get to increase our ability to spend money on defence. So basically it means private capital will be funding our defence forces.
Ah, and this is what Richard Marles was talking about in his press club speech.
Exactly.
His push towards private capital. It's not just venture capital firms. It's actually setting up a multilateral bank, which everyone then puts money into and then invests.
Invest. And so when you look at things like the IMF, the International Monetary Fund, World Bank and all the rest of it, great idea in principle. Everyone throwing in a few bucks so that when a poor country can't afford to feed its people, you say, here's a few bucks. But then when they can't make the repayments, that's when governments are changed. That's when health funding is cut. That's when education funding is cut. That's when you become a vassal, not just to the West, but to the Western banks. This is a slide towards fascism. You know, they say that they're going to generate 3,500 jobs in defence finance and international operations, specialised research and analysis. Now, we're spending all this money, and we're already spending all this money in defence. How are we? Who's going to pay these 3,500 jobs in defence finance? Because they're not going to be like your Uber driver on $25 an hour.
No, and also on analysis, what major defence company actually pays analysts anymore instead of just paying the AI company to provide that analysis for you?
Well, it'd be another company.
It'd just be another company.
And then these ones will be bashing each other over the head with their analysis and reports.
And I think, like, you know, talking back to you know, looking at the IMF as an example, when we talked to Clinton Fernandez a couple of weeks ago, we spoke about the IMF and that the best way to control a country is to control its debt. And so we're talking
best about... Best way to control a person.
Best way to control a person, indeed. But I guess thinking about this is now it's military specifically for military capability.
Yeah.
So that control is going to become through lending for military capability.
Which means that the companies will determine defence policy. All right, because they say, no, we're not going to invest in this, but we will invest in that. Anyway, that's where we're up to. I might talk about the DSRB in depth in a future week, but that's all we have today.
That's all we have time for today. Don't forget, Radiothon's coming up. Get ready, and we'll be at you again next week. You're tuned to Community Radio 3CR.
More then.